Hello, welcome to your meditation practice as part of the Open Heart Project. My name is Susan Piver. I am very happy to sit with you in meditation. We're going to sit together today for 10 minutes and we're going to start soonish. So please take your seat and get settled, whether you're on a cushion on the floor with your legs crossed loosely in front of you or in a chair on the sofa. And if possible, sit with your feet flat on the floor or in some way that enables you to feel upright. So today I want to do something a little bit different. It involves music, and I'll explain exactly how right now. So I was thinking about something I once heard Khandro Rinpoche say. Khandro, K-H-A-N-D-R-O, a brilliant teacher. If you ever have a chance to hear her or read her works or watch a video, you should. She is everything, I would say. So once she was giving a talk on finding a teacher, and she described, as is described in Buddhist thought generally, that the teacher arises in three ways: on the outer level, the inner level, and the secret level. And not just teachers, but everything, all truths, all phenomena, all experience has an outer, an inner, and a secret quality or manifestation. So often I hear from people who want to know, how do I find a teacher? And that is a surprisingly complicated question. You know, if this was 50 years ago or 100 years ago, we would have many, many choices in terms of Buddhist teachers. But it's harder and harder to find. Anyway, that's not the point. The point is, let's examine outer teacher, inner teacher, and secret teacher. And then music will come in to explain all three, if you ask me. I'm making this up, so don't forget that part. So the outer teacher, that's easy. Someone that teaches you something, an actual human, whether you hear a talk by them in person, like I was lucky enough to do with Khandro Rinpoche, or you read their book, or you watch a video, or you just learn from them in some way, like in an actual, straightforward, easy to understand way. The outer teacher is someone out there who's trying to explain something to you. So that's kind of easy. The inner teacher is what responds, you could say, to what the outer teacher is saying. Because sometimes when we're lucky, we read something or hear something. And by the way, the outer teacher doesn't have to be Buddhist, just anyone who teaches you anything profound about your journey. There's something in us when we encounter truth that speaks to us that goes, I recognize that. Sometimes in the best case scenario, you think, oh, I knew that. I didn't know I knew it, but I did. It's that familiar, that intimate. Whatever I'm reading, whatever I'm hearing, whatever the outer teacher is offering me, I already somehow possess it within me. Otherwise, I wouldn't recognize it. So this is a kind of learning that is not about intellectualization. I'm pretty sure I don't have to say, but it's a different kind of knowing. And that knower is always here. You could say the inner teacher is intuition, although that gets a little dicey. You could say that it's a little voice or knowing within yourself that says, no, don't go that way, go this way. Now it's dicey because it's easy to confuse the inner teacher with bullshit that we've learned from various bullshitty sources that tell us what we should think or how we should feel or what we should do or the signs to look for or laws of attraction. Don't think this, you should only think that. Okay, maybe some of those things are helpful. Some of them actually are, but they often stand between us and the voice of the inner teacher, that what we should think and who we should be and what we ought to look for as clues along our path. So when you enter your path, looking for something, the entire scope of experience is divided into two things. What I'm looking for, not what I'm looking for. There's a whole range of nuance and beautiful discovery that goes missing when we deploy conventional wisdom along the path. The inner teacher is still there going, hey, I'm still here. And then the secret teacher, the most difficult to explain because it's a secret. Partially it's a secret because I don't know it. But the secret teacher has something to do with the phenomenal world, trying to speak to you, trying to convey something. In this way, the secret teacher is the entirety of phenomena. Now, I'm not saying it's trying to teach you something for your own good, or I don't know what it's trying to do, but there are certain messages, let's say, that come through. Not that we've manufactured them, but that we have noticed them. So I'll give you a short example, and then we'll talk about what music has to do with this. So recently, a couple weeks ago, I was in Colorado, in a beautiful, beautiful place, teaching a retreat on something called the Heart Sutra. I'm sure some of you are familiar with it. It's one of the most well-known texts within all of Buddhism, particularly Mahayana Buddhism. The Heart Sutra, or the Prajna Paramita Sutra, is being chanted right now all over the world by gazillions of people. I've chanted it myself almost every day for over 30 years. And the version of the Heart Sutra that I've chanted is like 1.5 pages long. But the full Prajna Paramita Sutra is something like 25,000 lines long. It's enormous. And then there's a version that is 1.5 pages, like 54 lines, according to my count. That's the one I do. And it is also said that the entire text, all 25,000 words or lines, can be expressed in a single syllable. And that syllable is ah. That's not our point here right now. So I was teaching a 10-day retreat on the Heart Sutra. Going to practice the Heart Sutra, we're going to discuss it, we're going to try to fall in love with it. I was going to say understand, but you can't understand it. It's inscrutable, it's inexplicable. That's part of its power. So while I was there, there was another teacher wrapping up a program that he was teaching. And this teacher's name was Kaz Tanahashi Sensei. A brilliant calligrapher. I think he's 94 years old right now, still doing his thing. And he happened to have written a fantastic book on the Heart Sutra. Like, if there are two people in this retreat center and one of us was going to teach the Heart Sutra, no one would have guessed it was me, because he's an actual master. So I was kind of like, kind of embarrassed to be here doing this with this actual Heart Sutra master right here. Anyway, he would walk by me in the dining hall or on the path or whatever, and I didn't say anything. I would just wait till he passed, and I would sort of bow to him. I didn't want to bow in front of him because I didn't want to embarrass him. It was amazing that he was there. And also a little embarrassing, as mentioned. So anyway, at one point, I'm walking into this lodge building that I'm staying in, and oh, he's sitting right there with his suitcase, waiting to get picked up to leave the land to go to the airport. And I just say hello, and I keep going, and then I stop when I get into the hallway, like, this is your chance. He's right there. He's just sitting there waiting. So I go back in, and I introduce myself and say, I'm teaching something on the Heart Sutra, and I know that you have taught the Heart Sutra in many ways, many times. If you had one thing to say to people who are beginning to study the Heart Sutra, what would you say is the most important thing for them to know? And without skipping a beat, he said, the most important thing is the final word of the mantra, because the Heart Sutra says, has a lot of words. Once the Blessed One was dwelling in Raksha Griha, so forth and so on. And then towards the end, it says, the Prajnaparamita mantra, the thing that encapsulates the whole Heart Sutra, is said in this way. Om Gate Gate Paragate Parasamgate Bodhi Svaha. Svaha is the last syllable that he was referring to. So Om means hey, something like that. Here, Gate Gate means beyond, gone beyond, gone beyond. You could say conventional understanding. Paragate, really gone beyond. Parasamgate, seriously gone beyond. Bodhi, awake. Svaha, boom. Translated usually as something like so be it. I often translate it as mic drop. It's like, I said it, I put it down. Are you picking it up? Boom, there it is, svaha. So he said the most important thing to explain, to tell people that the most important word is svaha, which he said is translated as so be it, but it can also be translated as joy. Joy. Gone beyond, seriously gone beyond, majorly gone beyond, awake, joy. So I'm like, okay, thank you. And then when I started teaching this program that night, actually, I told this story. And then let it just be at that. And throughout the retreat, from that point forward, for whatever reason, people kept using the word joy. This is hard, because it's very hard to sit there for hours and hours a day, but it's joyful. I don't understand it, but there's joy in the not understanding. Now, I could have planted that seed, of course, you know, subconsciously. It's all about joy, y'all. But people were saying it in all sorts of ways. And then in our closing session, when we were getting feedback from people, how was it, what'd you learn, and so on, many people commented on the presence of joy, the felt sense of joy. So this is a long-winded way of saying the secret teacher, perhaps orchestrated in some inscrutable way, this tiny conversation with Ta-Nehisi Sensei, my little story, and then people seeing joy in various places where they looked within and around themselves. So no one taught us that. I mean, Ta-Nehisi Sensei explained something, but there was more a sense of there's a voice trying to come through, and it's talking about joy. Why? I don't know. What am I supposed to do with it? I have no idea. That's where we get into trouble, by the way. It means this, and therefore I should do that. No, the secret teacher, we just feel. And the less we think we know about what they're trying to say, the more intelligent we are, I would say. So, okay, here we come now to the music part. So in the Heart Sutra, I was trained to teach it. I'll include a link to the Heart Sutra here, by the way, in case anyone wants to read it. It's quite inscrutable and beautiful. I was taught that the meaning of the Heart Sutra comes across in three ways. And this will all relate to the three teachers in a moment. First, the meaning of the words. Once the Blessed One was dwelling in Raksha Griha at Vulture Peak Mountain together with the great gathering. Okay, there's a lot of words. Well, then, yeah. Let's try to think about what they mean. Second way, the sound of the words, not the meaning. Once the Blessed One was dwelling in Raksha Griha at Vulture Peak Mountain together with a great gathering of the Sangha monks and a great gathering. And it's usually chanted in a kind of monosyllabic way, so the soundness of it is emphasized rather than the reading it for meaning and inflection. We just intone it. And that's the second way the meaning comes across. And the third way is through the environment in which it is all said. Heard. Because when you listen to something, it tends to perfume the environment in a certain way. So, of course, there's no better example of this than music. So, I realized this, I was taking a walk the other day and I was listening to my music on my phone, and this song came on. This is one I'm going to play for you by Chet Baker called You Don't Know What Love Is. It's beautiful, jazzy, peaceful, spacious recording of a jazz standard sung by the great trumpet player Chet Baker, who has a very reedy voice. And then in my random mix shuffle, the next song that came on was called Jump Around by House of Pain, like a early mid 90s hip hop band. And it's very different sounding than Chet Baker, Jump Around, House of Pain. So as I was listening to these things, I'm like, oh, that's funny. And then I noticed how the world looked different as I was listening to these different pieces of music. So I'm gonna play, not Jump Around, but You Don't Know What Love Is. And I'm gonna play it once, but I'd like to suggest that you listen to it three times. Listen to it for the meaning of the words. You know, it's a romantic, heartbroken love song. Okay, what is this song saying? You don't know what love is until you've learned the meaning of blues. Until you've loved a love you had to lose, you don't know what love is. It's a pretty simple, but very touching. Then listen to it a second time, but try not to hear the meaning of the words. Just hear the sound of the singing voice, which, as mentioned, is reedy and so very instrumentally sounding. It sounds almost like an instrument, so that's why I picked this song. So listen for the second time, just for the sound of it, not the meaning. And then on the third listen, listen for how your world feels. The room that you're sitting in, the space that you're in, the bus that you're on, wherever you happen to be listening. Feel into the environment as you listen to this same song and note what it feels like. Outer teacher, meaning of the words. Inner teacher, sound of the words. Secret teacher, environment. This piece of music, or any piece of music really, conveys more directly than any words I could use what is meant by outer, inner, and secret knowing. So, let's listen, and then let's sit.
You don't know what love is until you've learned the meaning of the blues. Until you've loved a love you've had to lose, you don't know. You don't know how lips hurt until you've kissed and had to pay the cost. Until you've flipped your heart and you have lost, you don't know. Do you know how a lost heart feels? The thought of reminiscing, and how lips that taste of tears lose their taste for kissing. You don't know how hearts burn for love that cannot live yet never dies. Until you faced each dawn with sleepless eyes, You don't know what love is. Don't know how hearts burn for love that cannot live yet never dies. Until you faced each dawn with sleepless eyes, how could you know what love is? What love is? What love is?
I hope you enjoyed that half as much as I did. And again, listen to it three times, listen to more. The meaning of the words, outer teacher, the sound of the words, inner teacher, and the environment that is created as you listen, secret teacher. And what Khandra Rinpoche said to wrap up this conversation is, the job of the outer teacher is to introduce you to the inner teacher. And the job of the inner teacher is to introduce you to the secret teacher. And she didn't say this, but the implication was, if the handoffs are not made, someone is falling down on the job. So let's practice. Please establish your posture by sitting up straight to your ability. Everybody, many people have back things, neck things, just sit up straight, but in a way that also feels comfortable, but not slouchy. The hands rest on the legs, palms down. The bottom half is heavy and the top half is light. Relax your belly. The area around your heart, your throat. Let the shoulders relax. The mouth is closed, but the lips and teeth can be slightly parted. Breath is natural in and out through the nose, unless you have a cold or allergies. But otherwise, just breathing. You already know how to do that. Just keep doing that. The eyes are open. And the gaze is soft and cast down to a comfortable spot in front. You're not looking straight down and you're not looking at the horizon, but something in between. Relax your brow. Let your attention come to rest on the breath, the feeling of the body breathing, not the observation of the body breathing, the feeling. Feel the inhale and the exhale. Very simple. Let your mind be as it is. A lot of thoughts, few thoughts, doesn't matter. It's just like a stream that's constantly flowing. And we have jumped out of the stream for the moment and are sitting on the banks. And it just keeps flowing. No problem. If you notice that you have become absorbed in a line of thought, not a thought, a line of thought, so that you've spaced out, in other words, no problem. You just woke up and you saw that you spaced out. That's great. Notice that. Don't just push it away, but touch it, as it were, with your attention. Label it thinking, and then let go. Just let go. Come back and begin again, feeling your body breathe. So we'll sit together in silence for a little while. Thank you so much for your practice. Thank you for practicing with me. Thank you for listening to music with me. And thank you for practicing together. I'll see you next week.